Broadcasting from Manhattan Beach and the World Wide Web, you're listening to CHSR, HealthyLife.net.
As a service to our listeners, this program is for general information and entertainment purposes only. CHSRHealthyLife.net does not recommend, endorse, or object to the views, products, or topics expressed or discussed by show hosts or their guests. We suggest you always consult with your own personal, medical, financial, or legal advisor.
Get ready for Mind Shock with Dr. Ron Dalrymple. The premier podcast in the world, bringing you hidden truths about your mind's incredible powers. Get ready to free your mind.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Mind Shock. Dr. Ron Dalrymple. They bring you another show about the front edge of the higher mind. We often call it the supermind. In fact, we all have a higher mind within us, above us, always there talking to us, waiting for us to open up to it, to realize it's there. I'm talking about recently a genius series, like how do certain people in history attain a state of mind referred to as genius? You know, guys like Einstein, Edison, Tesla, Bacon, all these guys, and, you know, Kepler, Copernicus. There's a whole list of people who throughout history have attained a much greater state of mind, of consciousness, and have used it in the sciences and the arts and creativity and writing and whatever, bringing new ideas, new concepts, new works to the world. Today we're going to talk about Sir Isaac Newton, who is one of the great minds in history and the world of science. We'll talk about. He's very similar in some respects to Nikola Tesla, we talked about, and also Sir Francis Bacon. Very, very interesting. These are also great minds we've talked about before who really helped change the world. Each one of these people has really helped change the world and molded to where we are today. Now, what Newton did was he compared the real world, physical world, with a simple mathematical representation of it. He found ways to devise mathematical formulas to describe the motion of planets and also motion in general within the physical plane. So there's something very similar with quantum field psychology. Back in 2004, in fact, it was 20 years ago, it's kind of our anniversary, is this month, April 2004, I was in Aviano, Italy, working for U.S. Air Force, which is at the base of the Italian Alps. And what happened was I've been researching these concepts going back to 1969. It always kind of came together then. I read countless books about this and worked on it and put together the theories. And basically sat down 1 month in April and wrote a book called Quantum Field Psychology, which is now on Amazon, which you can check out. That was also the basis of a movie called The Endless Question to help explain and make it more simple. It was 20 years ago this month that we did that because it all kind of came together. It's the same thing when we took the human mind. And if you think of the mind as an energy field which transcends the physical brain, then how could you explain that in terms of math and physics? Well, that's what quantum field psychology does. Represents the functions of mind. What we found is you could take all the modern-day theories of psychology and express them in terms of quantum physics, topological mathematics, and calculus. It might sound complicated. It really is much simpler when you read it. It all kind of fits together and just makes sense. But in any case, this is what Newton did years ago, centuries ago. And the high point of the scientific revolution at that time was his discovery of universal gravitation in 1687. The idea that all objects attract each other proportional to the product of their masses, how big they are, how dense they are, and inversely proportional to the square of their separation. So like two objects attract each other all the time. All objects attract each other, believe it or not, often in small ways, but the biggest attractive field for us here is the gravitational field of the Earth, which pulls us down, of course, towards the surface of the Earth or below it. So there's a huge mass here, but a much greater mass, of course, is the sun. Now, the sun is pure energy compared to the Earth, and it's vastly, vastly powerful, but it has a much greater attractive force because the planets spin around the sun. So what Newton was looking at, Kepler looked at this, and so had Hooke. In the case of 1687, Newton was 45 years old, so relatively young. His thinking was influenced by Hooke's, Robert Hooke's work on curved motion. what was kind of like the ruling brain back then, as it were, of the Royal Academy in England, which was like the organization to belong to for scientists. And of course, these guys get into all kinds of arguments and debates, and there's a lot of egos, obviously involved, just like today in the world of science. There's massive egos fighting each other over this and that, different belief systems. At times, Hooke and Newton really got into it, because a lot of jealousy running back and forth. So Hooke, been like the ruling mind there for a long time in the Royal Academy, the guy they all looked up to, was really threatened by this young guy, Newton. So Isaac comes along, his brilliant ideas, he's unquestionably brilliant, his mathematical considerations and work we've done up to that point. But he also had a lot of psychological problems. This is what's very, very interesting. As we get into this, you'll see. In case they were jealous back and forth, fighting at times over various issues. In fact, Hooke criticized Newton pretty severely for some of his work. And Newton really lost. He blew up over this, went into a rage reaction, became very, very angry, vindictive. So it settled within him, this torrent of emotion deep within him, totally out of control, and disproportional to the situation. He pushed his buttons. So in any case, the influence of Hooke eventually led Newton to showing that planetary motion follows an ellipse, not a circle, but a long ellipse, kind of egg-shaped, around the central sun, and that our solar system itself also follows an ellipse, and that so do galaxies, and so the entire universe follows various ellipses of motion. So it's a very, very interesting phenomenon that you describe this. See, a rotating planet held by a centripetal force for a central object of the sun. Now, I worked at NASA many years ago, back when I was a kid, when I first discovered quantum field psychology. We, of course, were studying all the sciences. At NASA, we had scientists from all over the world who came there. I was at Goddard Space Flight Center in Greenbelt, Maryland, to the University of Maryland, studying math and physics, and it was really a fascinating time because they had meteorologists there, oceanographers, astronomers, you know, physicists, of course, mathematicians, computer experts. We had people there from every scientific field you could imagine studying what it would take to put people in space and survive in space. And, of course, finally did it. So it was an amazing, amazing accomplishment in a short period of time because the whole world got behind it. You get scientists from all over the world come to the U.S. to work for NASA. Of course, you also had Russia working on this in their own world, and eventually Chinese and others have gotten the space race as well. No longer a race, but the space exploration. And so at times it's the combining of various minds that leads to great answers. So one person stimulates another. So at times competition makes you push somebody else to go in a new direction and make new discoveries. So while it might be negative in nature in some respects, you know, competition, whatnot, people fighting back and forth, it can lead also to great discoveries and accomplishments. In this case, Hooke had the idea about curved space and whatnot and motion, and Newton did the mathematics for it. He figured it out. And Newton was known for, you know, to intensely concentrate. Like when he was a kid, he would sit and study a leaf, for example, for hours, or just study nature, study trees, he'd just stare at things and study them, exploring their depth of his mind. But he found that the human mind, of course, you know, his mind is energy indeed. The mind has great powers and whatnot to do things that we don't fully understand yet at all, which are there. We're just now touching the bare surface of the true powers of mind. In case you had deep, deep concentration, you stare upon an object or a subject, you study from all directions, come up with amazing answers. Now, we talked before about Nikola Tesla, who did the same thing. He also would sit in great depth of study and go into great concentration upon ideas. In fact, he said that he would visualize the creation, for example, of a new motor he was working on. You could see it perfectly in his mind's eye. He'd visualize it, full functioning, before he built it. You see every part of it. He'd study for months the effects of friction wearing down the parts. Now imagine that. You see it so clearly, so vividly, that he'd watch the effects of friction upon the parts of it. And then when he actually built it, months later, it'd run perfectly. So he could visualize it and bring it down from the world of abstraction we talked about, the world of abstract thought, down to the world of concrete thought, where the abstract or general ideas put in a concrete form, and they're empowered with the emotion, the energy of it, loving what you're doing, concentrating with powerful, loving energy, makes things manifest that much more quickly, and then able to build it in the physical world. So the ideas start in high-level germination of ideas, present at a concrete level, and you bring it down to the physical world. And most people had to experiment to build something like Edison, for example, would experiment to build a physical object. But Tesla could visualize the entire thing in his mind's eye and see it finished. So it's a higher level of visualization, a higher level of abstract thought. Many others have been able to do that. For example, Mozart was well known for that, the musical genius, where he would visualize all the music. He could hear it in his mind's ear. He could hear every note of every instrument, entire symphony, and create that in his mind's ear. He'd write down, say, one day, like the whole flute section, all different pieces. Another day, the bass section, whatever, or bass section. Just amazing. Write down all the different instruments and whatnot. So think of the amazing accomplishment that is. Now, most musicians could not do that. Even Beethoven and whatnot have to, like, play it out by hearing it and whatnot, trying to crawl in the air, see what sounds right. Whereas Mozart could hear it perfectly, note by note, and bring it down to the world. So it's also similar to Eric Clapton, who put together rock and blues, and put together like a whole new musical form back in the 60s and the 70s. He also said later that he did love from anger. He was very, very angry at what he went through as a child. He was rejected by his mother, we'll get to later on. But in any case, that drove him. Sometimes a great conflict early in your life can drive a person in a direction to discover new things. So come out of a broken home, they have a great drive to put their energy, put their force into something creative, something good. Take your focus off the negativity of a broken home, which happened to many of these people, and they create something tremendous for the world to enjoy. In any case, Hooke had the idea, he did the math for it, and he was a great, great concentrator. Now, I mentioned that Tesla and Edison were very different, and that Tesla could visualize at a higher level, whereas Edison had to do much more trial and error. Again, Mozart received things at a higher level, whereas Beethoven had to do trial and error. But concentration on an idea leads to great insights. So where you can concentrate your mind, think of the mind as energy, and where you concentrate your mind, it's like a microscope or a telescope, where you focus the energy by the lenses of the mind and the concentration, that's how you make great discoveries. That's how you do incredible things. It's a matter of concentration, which is a big part of creativity. It is something that many folks have trouble with because their minds jump from one thing to another. For example, when people smoke pot, their minds will jump all over the place, go from idea to idea. So it's good for association, you could say, but not good for concentration. And the other drugs and whatnot people take can also destroy concentration power. Just as many of the chemicals in our food and chemicals in the air and whatnot can destroy concentration. Concentration is a very great, great quality or talent to develop as well. I knew a mathematician one time. I was at Boulder. I was working at the university out there doing research many years ago, back in the 70s. And this guy was a brilliant mathematician. He had a PhD in math. He also was a world-class chess player. He's an international grandmaster. He could sit and visualize the entire chessboard and play the entire game in his mind's eye. So he played the whole thing. He's in a different room with no board there, and I'd be in another room. And he'd play a game of chess, and he could visualize the whole thing. And he, of course, he'd usually win because I beat him a few times, just, probably by accident. But this guy was amazing. Now, think about Bobby Fischer. Bobby Fischer also had an incredible power of concentration where he would work out all kinds of new moves and creativity, where he could also sit for hours and concentrate very, very deeply and work on new chess moves. So when he played Boris Spassky many years ago for the World Championship, Spassky had worked out, and his team of Russian masters had worked out all these different openings for pawn to king 4. That's a classic opening Bobby Fischer had used. Well, then in the game against Spassky, he blew him away by opening pawn to queen 4. That changed everything, and the Russians totally freaked out. The 100 masters, they were beaten by basically one guy whose depth of concentration and power of creativity was much greater. He used that, of course, on purpose to throw them off. Bobby's very good at psychological warfare. He knew how to play psychological games against his opponents, freak them out. In any case, concentration on an idea leads to massive, massive insights, especially when you pour love into it. So when you love what you do, you pour that loving energy into it, you really enjoy it, that helps open up all kinds of doors for you. If you don't like what you're doing, you're probably in the wrong field. You're probably in the wrong job. It's very important to be doing something that you really love, you really enjoy, you can put your heart into. It's a combination of heart and mind, which is very, very powerful. And it's working synchrony because a heart discovering really is like almost like a mind force, perhaps it is, of its own. And it has tremendous powers, which we're just now beginning to learn more about. But mind and heart, pardon me, must go together to make things happen. So if a person's heart is broken or separated in different ways, you can see the effect it has, right? Somebody's heart has been stepped on by other people, has been hurt a lot, has been damaged by other people, it can have profoundly negative effects, or, like I mentioned earlier, might drive them to greater accomplishment, despite all the pain they have. That's why you might find some musicians, for example, or writers or whatever, who drink a lot of alcohol, some use drugs to tap into deeper levels of thought, like Edgar Allan Poe is well known for alcohol and hashish and opium, who knows what. He actually died in a gutter, as it were, in Baltimore. A brilliant poet, brilliant writer. He created the detective novel form. He wrote some incredible poetry as well, but often under influence. So that Samuel Coleridge, in A Rime of the Ancient Mariner, wrote under influence allegedly, I should say allegedly, of opium. So, in any case, these drugs can open up different avenues of thought, but it does so at a price because the drugs affect the mind and body in various deleterious ways, various negative ways. It's far better to get in those deeper states of mind through meditation, through concentration, through working out, getting strong, exercise. And when you do running, you get into a runner's high. Working out also detoxifies your body, clears your mind, makes you feel a lot better. So harmonizing the body, getting in great shape, detoxifying your body, having your mind and heart harmonized is very, very powerful in terms of helping you create your life and be successful in life, whatever you do. Remember also, love light illuminates. The power of love is really the power of light that illuminates the way for you in so many areas. So loving what you do is profoundly important. So you love what you do and you concentrate on pouring love into it, not fear. If you pour fear out, if you're in a job where you're full of anxiety and fear and depression, whatever, you're probably going to be miserable in the job or in the relationship. And it's not going to work because the negative energy you put out constantly affects people around you. So if you're involved in a relationship, for example, you're full of negativity and anxiety and depression and guilt, whatever, you pour those negative forces out, the other person's going to feel them most powerfully and will push them away. It can certainly destroy the relationship. It's important to get your heart and mind in harmony. Profoundly important. That's what really leads to great success and much greater, of course, happiness in life. So Newton's father died, let's go back, in war, on the endless wars in England in 1642, and his mother was left with his money, a fair amount of money. Now, English wars occurred from 1642 to 51. Fighting took place in the British Isles between supporters of the monarchy of Charles I and his son, Charles II. And opposing groups in each of Charles's kingdoms, including the Parliamentarians in England, Scotland, and Ireland. In any case, Parliamentarians are often backed by the international bankers we talked about before, where the international banking cartel was moving their way into these countries to take control of them from within. So it's interesting how politics played a role in this. Took away his father, which played a major role in how his personality developed. So in any case, English wars were traditionally considered to have begun in England in 1642 when Charles I raised an army against the wishes of Parliament. Well, again, it was the monarchy, as it were, Charles represented monarchy versus the Parliament, which is controlled by the national banking forces who were buying the members of Parliament, just like today, some members of Congress are bought and paid for, maybe three-fourths, maybe 80%, maybe more, are bought and paid for by various financial interests who own them. They don't represent the people at all. They represent the people who own them. They do what they're told to do, and they vote the way they're told to vote. So they're basically prostitutes in high office. Sorry about that, congressmen and senators, but that's really true, and they know it. Believe me, they know it very well. They sold their souls. It's time for the whole world to wake up, and all these crooks in high office, and expose the fact and replace them with honest government. In the case, Oliver Cromwell's another big figure back then, English soldier and statesman, who temporarily took control of the kingdom. He was allegedly also owned by the banking cartel. He stepped in after they pushed out the monarchy. Charles I, in fact, was killed in 1647 due to manipulation and deceit. In any case, Cromwell eventually was the so-called Lord Protector, right, of the kingdom, right? So he raised his country status once more to a leading European power. History books say, decline had gone through since the death of Queen Elizabeth. Well, that's not entirely true, of course, because the decline really was induced by the fact that, again, the banking cartel took control of the country by installing James I in power in 1603. Elizabeth I died. In fact, Francis Bacon, who we'll talk about, was the true inheritor of the throne. Bacon should have been king, and he was a genius who wrote the Shakespearean plays, according to many sources. He also created the Scientific Revolution, his book Novum Organum. He and his group of writers translated all the books of the world from Greek and Latin into English, and then used the Gutenberg Press, and then in 1445, and used widely by his grandfather, Henry VIII, to disseminate his books and the Bibles they created throughout the world. He created the King James Version of the Bible. He was a genius who understood the higher powers of the mind, utilize them is able to tap into them. In any case, he would have been king. Now, if he'd been king, imagine how that would have influenced the world. Instead, he was pushed out, forced out by various opposing families who were backed by the dark forces. Some of his families are still in power in the world. They're still in power. They pushed out a genius like Bacon. In any case, often politics and, of course, history are intertwined naturally. And what's going on behind the scenes is really what reveals the motivations and so forth. And history books usually don't tell you, of course. It's hidden from the public. As occurred before, the National Banking Cartel at the time was trying to destroy the monarchy and replace it with a controlled parliament, which, of course, they did, just like in this country. Congress is controlled. In fact, it was done in England in 1688 with the so-called English Revolution, which is a lot of blown. It wasn't a revolution. It was a takeover from within of vast corruption, of buying and assassinating and moving out of the way for members of Congress. They had to move out of the way. Once they got control, they passed a Banking Act in 1694 in England, which took control of the money system of Britain, which they still control today, right? Parallel to the Federal Reserve System in the U.S., which was passed in 1913, December 23rd, and most of Congress was gone. They manipulated this and pushed it through, the banking cartel did, take control of the U.S., and they still control the U.S. through the money system. Just like they control 189 countries in the world through the money system. Still going on. Folks, here we are today with Dr. Ron Dalrymple on Mind Shock, talking about the evolution and development of Sir Francis Bacon and Tesla, and focusing today especially upon Sir Isaac Newton, who was a great, great creative scientific genius, and of course the world he grew up in, the political world as well. Folks, we're going to take a brief break, work from our sponsor. We'll be right back. There's a lot more coming.
This show is brought to you by BarkBox, free box to all listeners of Mind Shock. Go to BarkBox.com/MindShock. Do you ever wonder how the mind works? The Endless Question, a film by Dr. Ron Dalrymple, shows you a new theory of mind, one that bridges the road between spirituality and science while revealing to you the laws of creativity, things that can open up your mind to limitless possibilities. It is literally a theory that changes everything. And once you know it, you can apply it to your own life. View The Endless Question for free on Amazon Prime. The Endless Question on Amazon Prime.
ASMC, the premier German company that supplies everything for adventure, from outdoor clothes to outdoor gear, even backpacks. Lots of quality and lots of specials. To start your adventure, go to HealthyLife.net's advertiser page and click on ASMC.
Paradise Found 2015 is a film that sparks of intrigue about the discovery of quantum field psychology. Throw in a sexy spy story, a conflict between father and son against the backdrop of NASA, and interspersed with World War II flashback combat scenes, and you'll be surprised to discover the foundation of a whole new theory of mind. Rent or buy Paradise Lost 2015 at Amazon.com and prepare for the explosive conclusion. That's Paradise Lost 2015. At Amazon.com.
Reach your health and fitness goals. Whether you want to lose weight, learn to dance, build muscle, or just live healthy, Beachbody gives you unlimited access to the nation's most popular fitness and weight loss solutions. Visit our advertiser page and click on Beachbody now.
A complete mind development course, The Inner Manager by Dr. Ron Dalrymple, helps you develop your concentration, memory, imagination, and more, all to help you program your mind towards success. But it's not a boring read. You are taken on a journey with a young man who is trying to start his own business and immerses himself into a journey of self-discovery. A powerful book that you can read again and again. Get The Inner Manager by Dr. Ron Dalrymple at Amazon.com. The Inner Manager at Amazon.com. Remember, positive impact. www.healthylife.net.
Hello, folks. Welcome back. Dr. Ron Dalrymple on Mind Shock. Talking today about the evolution of creative genius and the number of people throughout history, which is very, very illuminating to think about because it tells us a lot about not just how the human mind can be evolved and developed by each one of us to a much greater degree, which is what we're getting to. That's a fascinating part that we're getting at, right? But it's often fomented, as it were, from history and from politics and economics, all that's going on in the world, influences the development of each person in very profound ways and how we develop. But we also have the power, each of us, to transcend the world around us, no matter what the circumstances are, and create who we want to be at a much higher level. We'll get into that later on. In any case, the Banking Act was passed in 1694, taking control of the money system of Britain by the international banking cartel today. And the same people, the same families in some respects, still control today. In any case, with Newton, let's get back to him, his mother, after his father died, she then married a minister who also had lots of money, so she became rather wealthy. But she's not about to share with Isaac. She left with the new husband, went to live with him for 7 years, and had three children. So basically, Isaac was abandoned and rejected, which sowed the seeds of a very deep pathology in him psychologically. So later on, we'll get more into that in a minute, but later on she refused to pay for his going to Cambridge. Some of his mentors recognized his brilliance as a young man and arranged a scholarship for him to go to Cambridge. Now remember also that Cambridge was started by Henry VIII. We talked about some time ago, right? Who was a grandfather of Francis Bacon. In any case, sometime later, Newton came along, and this was a great school at the time, no doubt still is, but there's also certain biases taught in terms of how to think and what's going on in politics and economics. In any case, his mother wouldn't pay for him at all, so he went there on kind of a scholarship, which didn't pay for a lot, but helped pay for, his room and board and books and whatever. But to help pay for his education, now get this, he had to empty the toilet pans of his more wealthy classmates. Now, can you imagine this? Back in those days, they didn't have, running water and toilets, and then it came back in the 1870s and 80s and whatnot. He had running water inside for toilets and all that. So back then, they didn't have that. They had people sit on a bowl or something, or what the fashion toilet today, but beneath it was a pan that somebody had to carry out and dump outside or wherever. And poor Isaac, as a young man, had to do this. Often to laughter and the jeers and the insults of his classmates. You can imagine this. Here's a guy who lost his father before he was born, right? His mother then threw him away, as it were. He's raised by her parents, right? This happened to Eric Clapton also. Remember, his father left when he was very, very young. And his mother gave him away to her parents to raise. He didn't realize until he was 13, 14 that it was not his real mother, it was his grandmother. In any case, Newton, same thing happened to him. His father died before he was born, killed in the war. His mom gave him away. He was raised by grandparents. Then she comes back later with three other kids, and he was kind of pushed aside again. She wouldn't pay for his college, even though she had the money. So he had to work his way through by emptying the bedpans of these spoiled rich brats of the day who jeered at him and put him down. So you can imagine this. One of the most gifted people in the world, one of the most brilliant minds in the world, emptying toilet pans for spoiled rich kids. Think about that. Think about how humiliated he was, how ridiculed he was. He already had no emotional anchor because his father was gone. His mother had rejected him and thrown him away. He was raised with this brilliant mind and also super, super sensitive. Brilliant people are very sensitive and pick up things a lot of folks do not. They see things a lot of folks do not. They might think in multi-dimensions. They observe things a lot of people miss because of the powers of concentration, because of their studying and their growth and whatnot, the mind expands. In any case, he was ridiculed openly for this. You can imagine his profound humiliation. So he felt deeply the sneers and insults of these people. So in the early part of his life, he became a deeply introverted character and fiercely protective of his privacy. Even his maturity, once he became rich, famous, laden with honors and internationally acclaimed as one of the world's foremost thinkers, he still remained deeply insecure, given the fits of depression, outbursts of violent temper, and implacable in pursuit of anyone by whom he felt threatened. So he became somewhat paranoid of those who might threaten him. Very, very insecure. So we're getting down to the type of personality story we've talked about before, which I get into a little bit. Very, very interesting to think of one of the greatest minds in the world actually was a personality disorder. And no doubt many of them were, which probably drove them to higher level success. He's the most famous example of his carefully orchestrated campaign choice somebody else was against Gottfried Leibniz, who was a brilliant German mathematician, physicist, researcher and whatnot who had many accomplishments. And Newton believed, unfairly, that Leibniz had stolen his discovery of calculus. In fact, Leibniz developed it independently of Newton. They both developed calculus at the same time. This happens at times where minds kind of correlate and think together, although not with each other. So the mind is energy. If minds can communicate, this makes a lot more sense than might appear on the surface. Well, things that seem like coincidence, may not be at all, simply following the laws of higher physics of the mind, such as what we describe in quantum field psychology. Check out the book on Amazon. It'll blow your mind. Quantum field psychology shows you a scientific-based understanding of mind as an energy field which transcends the physical brain. Now, a lot of theories kind of play around with the idea, none of them get into development of math physics of it like we did 20 years ago. In any case, Leibniz, interesting guy, known as a German polymath. He's also a philosopher and diplomat. And he also invented other branches of mathematics and statistics. So he's been called the last universal genius. May not be true because he had various knowledge and skills in different fields, and because people since then have become more specialized since the Industrial Revolution. Back in those days, go back to like Aristotle and others, people were like getting into all kinds of fields. Well, a lot of people at the university still do. Some study lots of fields. But polymath studies one field very intensively, see how it all works, and applies to another field which they study intensively. So you put fields together, combine ideas together, which otherwise did not exist before. In any case, Newton attacked him over calculus very viciously. So Newton was also capable of great generosity and kindness, which showed more in his later years. But when he was a young man, he got into these very intense fits of temper and so forth. So psychological problems culminated what now would be called a nervous breakdown in mid-1693. In fact, at one point, for 5 nights of no sleep, he lost all grip on reality and thought his friends Locke, you know, John Locke and Pepys, were conspiring against him, which they were not. Newton confessed to Locke that during the crisis, that he was so enraged he actually wished ill upon his good friend. So many post-Freudian biographers and whatnot trace the roots of Newton's insecurity and aggressiveness to his earliest years. So no doubt it's true. His father died before he was born. He's barely 3 years old. His mother remarried and moved to her new home with her new husband, who's actually named Barnabas Smith. He's a minister, like I said, leaving the infant alone to his parents. Right? She came back later with 2 daughters and a son from her second marriage. So he's pushed aside again. But Hannah left young Isaac in the care of her parents. She came home later with Mary, Benjamin, and Hannah, her daughter. So he experienced abandonment as a child from his mother. Then she refused to go to college, profoundly important. But for the invention of those who recognize his genius, his life might have gone nowhere. He might have been destroyed by all this. You know, some folks are. Some experienced great depression, so huge mood swings, insecurity, because of the abuse and neglect he had suffered. So he developed what's called a rejection syndrome. He felt rejected. When I disagreed with him, he blew up in explosive rages because it tapped into a deeper level personality disorder, which we'll talk about in a second. Folks, here today, Dr. Ron Dalrymple on Mind Shock, talking about the evolution of genius. And so Isaac Newton, back in a moment, folks, a lot more coming.
Here's a fun, stimulating program that can teach you how to develop your own powers of creation. It uses a 3-part mind, stimulating approach to get you to develop your own creative thinking. It will help you create a powerful self-image and helps you see how you can take creative action. You'll develop your thinking power and your skills, and you can do this in 8 days. Get Dr. Ron Dalrymple's book, 8 Days to Creative Power, on Amazon.com. Overcome your problems with the step-by-step guide. So get 8 Days to Creative Power on Amazon.com.
Get high-quality glasses, sunglasses, and prescription lenses at eyeglasses.com. Choose from over 250,000 items and 400 brands. Already have frames? Get replacement lenses. It's easy. Go to our advertiser page and click eyeglasses.com.
A complete mind development course, The Inner Manager by Dr. Ron Dalrymple, helps you develop your concentration, memory, imagination, and more, all to help you program your mind towards success. But it's not a boring read. You are taken on a journey with a young man who is trying to start his own business and immerses himself into a journey of self-discovery. A powerful book that you can read again and again. Get The Inner Manager by Dr. Ron Dalrymple at Amazon.com. theinnermanager@amazon.com.
Reach your health and fitness goals. Whether you want to lose weight, learn to dance, build muscle, or just live healthy, Beachbody gives you unlimited access to the nation's most popular fitness and weight loss solutions. Visit our advertiser page and click on Beachbody now.
Do you ever wonder how the mind works? The Endless Question, a film by Dr. Ron Dalrymple, shows you a new theory of mind, one that bridges the road between spirituality and science while revealing to you the laws of creativity, things that can open up your mind to limitless possibilities. It is literally a theory that changes everything, and once you know it, you can apply it to your own life. View The Endless Question for free on Amazon Prime. The Endless Question on Amazon Prime.
HealthyLife.net, the positive radio network.
Hello, folks. Welcome back. Dr. Ron Dalrymple on Mind Shock. Talking about the evolution of creative genius. The focusing point is Sir Isaac Newton, one of the great minds in history, whose universal gravitation and laws of motion and whatnot would have helped change the world. Powerful, powerful laws which still reign very supreme in the world of physics and mathematics. In any case, when we're talking about what he went through in childhood, he suffered a profound rejection syndrome, which developed massive insecurity, a sense of abandonment. And what we find in world psychology is that at the core of the borderline personality disorder is a rejection syndrome, where a person has a massive sense of rejection, abandonment. He had all the classic phenomena there. He lost his father at a young age, before he was born, in fact. He was rejected by his mother. His mother is often the heart center of the family, because a woman's powerful heart, powerful loving heart, can be enormous. It can actually change the world, get you away from all the anger and the vindictiveness or whatever taught to people these days, so all the false philosophies put out. Bring folks back to healthy mind, healthy heart, powerful mind and heart connection, or not profound thoughts and profound love. When people do that, they come back into alignment, the higher power is trying to work through you. When we think negative thoughts and negative feelings as taught by the media today and all the corruption out there, takes people way off course. And women have very, very powerful emotional energy, and they use that emotional energy in a very magnetic and loving way. The power of love can be transformative. You really help other people and lift them up, of course, help themselves as well. The rejection syndrome is significant in borderline personality disorder. So he suffered greatly as a young man, and this makes a person very unstable emotionally. But at the core of your being is your self-image and self-esteem. So when your self-image is very negative or highly variable, your self-esteem is also highly variable, affected by the world around you, can set you off in these massive tidal waves of reaction. Borderlines can have massive blow-ups and go into what's called a micropsychotic episode. They literally lose conscious control, they lose sense of reality, might be for a few seconds, a few minutes, or of course in more advanced states they can become psychotic, like in a borderline who shifts in a different state, and they can stay, or bipolar, and stay there for much longer periods of time. In any case, the borderline has massive, massive mood swings along the way. This is what Newton had. It's called rejection syndrome. He had low self-esteem despite being a brilliant, creative person. He had negative self-image, despite the fact that the world, you know, revered his work, but he was highly reactive to rejection from other people or even any kind of criticism, which pushed his button and set him off. Now, it's interesting that Bacon also went through tremendous rejection in childhood. His mother, when he was the first, rejected him. His child denied he was her son until the age of 15. There was a big fight between he and Robert Cecil in court. And Cecil basically said that he was a bastard child of the queen, right? Can you believe saying in front of the queen? In any case, she finally admitted it to him, says, "You are my son." Then she sent him to Paris for 3 years, where he met a princess who later became the model for his Juliet, Romeo and Juliet. He was the author of Shakespearean plays. In any case, he also was greatly rejected by his mother. He denied becoming King Francis I in 1603 because of all the treachery in the kingdom, because she didn't support him. She turned on him, and she was pushed into it by his enemies. The big enemy, powerful enemies in his life, and he had to suffer through great ignominy, great rejection of other people, as did Newton, but in a different form. Here he was to be the king of the kingdom of England, right? Believe this. And yet he was rejected, stepped on, pushed down, and the king was denied him. And he was so pushed the vast levels of creativity. Now, Tesla was a bit different because Tesla had a very loving mother. His mother did not reject him. The rejection of the mother's love can really disrupt people because that mother's love is so powerful. And because they come from the mother's body, you know, it connects to them synchronously and whatnot, harmoniously. When she loves him infinitely, or loves her daughters, sons, whatnot, infinitely, then child loves him back. Child learns how to love, learns their self-worth, a very powerful self-esteem, have much more secure self-image, right? Helps him enormously. In fact, Freud made comments about that, we'll get to it a little bit, about how powerful a woman's love is, a mother's love is. But in any case, Tesla had a very loving mother, very close to her, in fact, very intuitive. Back when she was nearing death, he knew it intuitively. He traveled all the way to Slovenia, where she was, from New York, by ship. He jumped on a ship, went there, traveled to Europe by train to see her, because he knew he had to go see her. It was the last chance. He saw her right before she passed away. But again, it's their intuitive connection that led to that. Think about how powerful that is. And he invented various things like the radio. He invented Marconi. This has been alleged. He developed the various devices, which represent and symbolize the transmission of thought from one mind to another. Think about that. The physical world dimensions parallel what we can do as higher conscious energy beings. Now, isn't that amazing? Think about that. All the dimensions we made in the world and many more to come represent what we can do as higher energy beings. In any case, here's poor Newton. Being stepped on, looking at borderline personality disorder, male borderline, suffering enormously. In fact, Jonathan Swift made a very wry remark about this. He also was quite brilliant. He said, you can always tell a true genius in the world for all the dunces are allied against him. You can always tell a true genius in the world all the dunces are allied against him. That is so true, folks, because highly intelligent people are rejected by most other people. They aren't accepted at all. They're looked upon as oddities, as being strange, as being weird, whatever. And not accepted. So they're rarely accepted in any kind of circles or conventions. Even those of folks who should be much more accepted because they're intelligent too. But even so, let's say someone's way beyond them like Newton or Tesla or Bacon, then it's very hard to find acceptance of that because most folks are threatened by it. They basically reject the individual. In any case, people who are gifted are often hated and whatnot. And people who are not gifted, of course, hate and resent them for who they are and for what they can do. They're threatened by them, they're jealous of them, they'll attempt to sabotage them and destroy them. They ridicule them, they sneer at them, they sabotage them in countless ways. The masons of jealous egos connive and manipulate their way around them in endless games of sabotage. In case Bacon had bouts of depression, but Tesla did not, right? So Newton and Bacon both suffered, right? No doubt Newton much more. Bacon had some depression, no doubt, but doesn't appear to have been like a male borderline. He had a lot of support from other people, other writers, and so forth. Many people knew who he was. Many people around the kingdom at higher levels knew that he was the son of the queen. He had gotten out. But Tesla had a lot of support. Tesla would go out, for example, and dig ditches when he was broke in New York City. He was caught digging ditches one time by an engineer who knew him. He said, pull in a ditch. Tesla, get out of here. What are you doing? Came brought him out and gave him some of the work. So, but he had no pride. He had no ego. He simply was there to benefit mankind. It transcended the ego because his mind was focused upon the higher thoughts. And his job was to help humankind, despite the fact he was robbed and cheated and ripped off. He had many different inventions stolen from him, patents were stolen from him and whatnot by many people. So, and yet he maintained a very positive attitude. Very, very interesting. Very different. Very much more resilient and balanced individual because of mother's love, right? So, this gave him great faith in himself, which he carried throughout his life. Now, as Freud said, a mother's love can make her son a conqueror, or daughter for that matter. A mother's love can make their child a conqueror of the world. Like Freud said, exactly, a man who's been the indisputable favorite of his mother keeps for life the feeling of a conqueror. Because she gets such unadulterated love, this very powerful love, that accepts him all the time, and what he does, which always buoys him up, gives him strength and faith, until he incorporates that inside himself. So her heart raises up and teaches his heart I love himself and also and go out and do great things. Folks, I'm here today with Dr. Ron Dalrymple on Mind Shock, talking about the evolution of creative genius, talking about Sir Isaac Newton and a few others. Back, folks, in a few minutes. Got a lot more coming.
Per
Paradise Found, 2015 is a film that sparks of intrigue about the discovery of quantum field psychology. Throw in a sexy spy story, a conflict between father and son against the backdrop of NASA, and interspersed with World War II flashback combat scenes, and you'll be surprised to discover the foundation of a whole new theory of mind. Rent or buy Paradise Lost 2015 at Amazon.com and prepare for the explosive conclusion. That's Paradise Lost 2015 at Amazon.com.
If you want USA and worldwide car rentals, choose rentacar.com. Free cancellations on most bookings, no hidden charges. They are trusted by over 4 million customers. Visit our advertiser page and click on the Rent-A-Car banner.
Do you ever wonder how the mind works? The Endless Question, a film by Dr. Ron Dalrymple, shows you a new theory of mind, one that bridges the road between spirituality and science while revealing to you the laws of creativity, things that can open up your mind to limitless possibilities. It is literally a theory that changes everything, and once you know it, you can apply it to your own life. View The Endless Question for free on Amazon Prime. The Endless Question on Amazon Prime.
This is Jack Maher from the band Feed the Kitty. It's important to support the artists you love, and you can do that and get something authentic for yourself. Rock.com has the most coveted licensed merchandise of music, culture, and entertainment. So go to the advertiser page and click on Rock.com now.
Quantum Field Psychology, Second Edition, is an astounding book on the new theory of mind. It is the first unified field theory that incorporates the influence of the mind and emotion on physical reality, the universe, and even other minds. It actually integrates all modern psychology with quantum physics, mathematics, Western and Eastern spiritual beliefs. It's the true bridge between science and spirituality. Get your copy of Quantum Field Psychology, Second Edition, by Dr. Ron Dalrymple, on Amazon.com.
Radio your way. HealthyLife.net.
Hello, folks. Welcome back. Dr. Ron Dalrymple and Mind Shock. Talking today about the evolution of creative genius. Well, think about how important that is. That we're talking about these various examples of people who developed creative genius, who knew that had the DNA for it, was they were born with great genes, no doubt. They had the brain structures and whatnot and enough health to develop it. But they also did something else. They also studied and worked and learned very, very intensely over a period of many years. They became a polymath in their field. So a polymath, again, somebody studies something very, very intensively. In classing, you call it polymath in music because you go into an art school at the age of 13, his grandmother, who he called his mother, bought him a guitar, which he then started playing like 12 and 13 hours per day. He carried it with him all the time. He was constantly playing, so he studied musical forms. He went to all the blues, whatnot, listened to records, so he could like play all the blues songs he heard, and became really a great, really accomplished person at a young age. At 16 years old, he started playing in bands. They laughed at him and said, "Hey, little Eric, come in." He's walking here with his big guitar, right? And he kind of laughed at him until he started playing. And then he was so good, after 2 years of playing, they couldn't believe it. And by 17, just 4 years into it, he was world famous. Playing with John Mayall and the Blues Breakers, they write on the bridges in London, Clapton as God. Because the sound is so powerful, it's coming from that higher source. The person who contacts that higher source within and bring it into the world, it's an amazing, amazing force. So great singers can do that. Think about Elvis. Elvis learned how to sing in gospel. He's going to churches, right? He's growing up. Learned how to sing gospel in churches with the blues and whatnot, and gospel songs. And they taught him, tap into your inner source, right? Tap into your heart. Tap that feeling of love within you. Visualize it. Bring it forth, which he did. So he could sing like, what, 4 octaves? I mean, he's absolutely incredible. Where he shifted his voice around, he could put so much power, so much emotional power into it, he could transfix an audience. It's because a higher power is flowing through the human voice. The human voice is very, very powerful itself. And can command great effects upon the world, like great speakers can do it as well. Great, great politicians, statesmen, people can also do it. They can speak and, like, transfix an audience and convince them whatever they want to believe, which can be used or misused, of course. In any case, the creative power is inside everybody, the higher power is inside everybody, and the point is we can all contact into it. And we're doing a number of books about this and some programs we're developing how to develop, evolve that higher mind much more directly, more importantly, how to bring that into your daily life, your ego world. You know, the ego mind often blocks us up, is focused on the world around us, often full of like grief and fear and anxiety and doubt, just like some of these great geniuses, like with Newton, and like with Bacon and whatnot, what they went through, but they still brought forth great works. When a person resolves all that and dissolves the body emotion fixations we talk about in quantum field psych, just gets rid of those, energy comes through you, comes through much higher frequencies and much higher levels of intensity. Think about that. Higher frequency, right, and higher intensity. So you create in your world amazing things, far beyond what we often think to be true in our physical, three-dimensional world minds. Because we're wrong about so many things. We're taught so many wrong things in schools. Left the university, went to the University of Maryland, graduated with my bachelor's degree. I knew that we hadn't gotten close, discovered the truth of who we are as human beings. I knew there was so much more to discover. It just wasn't there. It's not being taught. It still is not, because it's just now being evolved and whatnot, different sources. In any case, the point is, when you tap into that higher mind, bring it forth into your world, what you can do with it is astounding. Now, Tesla, I believe the character of Ayn Rand's Howard Wark in The Fountain, I mentioned this before, was based upon Nikola Tesla, because at times he was out digging ditches. He was a brilliant architect and whatnot, attacked by the social world and whatnot, and really threatened by his creativity. You know, he's a real threat to progress and whatnot. Again, people at a secondary level were really threatened by somebody who was vastly beyond them. Happens all the time. In any case, how it worked, do the same thing. You go out and dig ditches if you had to, in between jobs. And so Tesla did. So Bacon and Newton were rejected by their mothers as very difficult lives, Newton especially, right? Bacon's mother was a queen, of course. She was his mother. He was denied the crown. It's an astounding thing. He was rejected by his mother similarly, but for years with her parents, which made him feel rejected. So Eric Clapton, which I mentioned, who also suffered greatly. He went through great bouts of depression and, of course, alcoholism and drug use. I went to his island a few years ago, Antigua, and talked to his people at Crossroads, his treatment center, to treat drug and alcohol abuse, send him referrals. Well, not really, but nice people. The beautiful island there and beautiful location in the Caribbean. A lot of folks there with great money to spend. I'm sure insurance covers it. Go there for 4 to 6 or 8 weeks, whatever, to break their addictions. The big part of breaking addictions is changing your thoughts and emotions, because thoughts and emotions themselves become addicting. Your beliefs are addicting. Your emotions are addicting. And you have to break those to get down to the heart of and to break the source of the addictions. In case we have habits of thought we learn in childhood, we grew up learning various habits, we perceive the world in a certain way, often we misperceive it, often we see it not correctly at all, we don't understand it because of the self-creative power of mind. See, what projections are out there bounces back to us so we think it's real. We project what we are perceiving, you see, bounces back. We often misperceive what that means. We reverse that and realize we are the source. You know, we have great power inside us, we're creating our worlds, we think about it all the time. We just focus on the source itself within us, not on the external world. Focus on the external world and mislead you and deceive you and knock you off course. Focus on a power inside of you. Focus on a light inside of you, inside your heart. The great center of your heart is where your life force connects to the physical body, very many sources, and also to what's called your third eye. In other words, the point between the two eyes and your forehead. Another great source of energy for thought and whatnot. To see brilliant suns of light there, in your forehead and also in your heart. Visualize upon those, meditate upon those, love those. Know that there are higher connections for you to a higher source. Know that you are the source. So what you project comes back to you all the time. So be careful what you think and what you feel. You can create in your life all kinds of chaos if you're not careful. And most of us do that. Understand your thoughts and emotions projected outward have great power to influence people around you. So be very careful not to harm anybody. Be very careful not to harm people. Don't step on them. Lift them up. Help them. Do good for them. Do good things. And that thing comes back to you many times over. Very, very powerful. These are laws of physics and laws of the mind. And we said about heart energy some time ago. The average heart emits about 20 photons per second. Right? Photons, of course, are particles of light. The heart gives off light. Heart is like its own mind. You have energy. Now, a healer's heart, a great healer, gives off, allegedly, by some studies, up to 100,000 photons per second. Think about that. It's a massively powerful, like, plasma field of energy, taking light energy outward all the time. So great healers can walk into a room and lift people up. And they can touch the arm or or the elbow, or whatever, of his great healer and be healed. Because the energy is such a high level, right? It's a much, much higher level that infuses into the physical body and can heal the body. We know that the power of suggestion, when used wrongly, can also cause all kinds of disease, you know? Like just studies and medicine and whatnot say, oh, you've got an abnormality there. It could be a tumor. Person goes into fear and panic attack, and their thoughts and emotions make it much worse, right? The power of thought and emotion, used negatively, make things much worse. And let's learn how to think positive thoughts all the time. There's the powers inside of you, connect to the higher force, which is above you, but also within you. Think of a tube of light coming down from the higher force down to you, trying you in light, and all the time, surround yourself in that light. That you are that light. You are that power. Don't believe the illusions world around you. Think for yourself, right? Because your thoughts and emotions are very, very powerful to create your life. Negative thoughts, negative emotions, and a positive one. Check out our books, folks. We talk about all this in Quantum Field Psychology, published 20 years ago, 2004, April. I'll sort of film the endless questions about this. We have a lot of other new books and new works coming out soon, so check us out online, go on Amazon, or go on the computer. Write my name, Dr. Ryan Dalrymple. My thumbs up. Folks, think about it. You have great power inside you. Do not misuse it. Don't miss this opportunity in life. Develop the highest power possible to help transform this world. We're in an age of darkness now, surrounded by all these dark beings trying to destroy the world. We have to counteract with the power of light inside everybody. So we need to use it in concert with each other. Thanks a lot, folks. Hang in there. God bless. And we're talking next time on Mind Shock. Dr. Ron Dalrymple signing off.